This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Jet Fuel.
Welcome to Fuel, the new business podcast for the UK business development community, brought to you in association with The Advertist, business development tools and insight for creative marketing and communications agencies. And I'm your host, a Smith called Keith. Now, when an industry-changing event such as a pandemic upsets your normal way of working, you find that the traditional ways of doing things also need to be updated and reviewed. And this week, we're looking at some great tools you can use to help your agency function as one, even when everyone is working from home. If you work in new business development, you'll know that more than half the battle of winning new clients is finding them and qualifying them. You need the very latest data, news, and intel from every sector, not just the ones you're in now, but the ones you might need in a couple of months' time. The Advertist is full of contact data, news, insight, tenders, mergers and acquisitions, and lists to power your next new business drive. It's updated every day, and the team do nothing else but focus on making your job easier, and they do it all for a price that any agency can afford. Isn't that reassuring? The Advertist gets you to the door. All you have to do is push through it. Visit The Advertist at www.theadvertist.com for a free trial or call the team on 0203 356 3717 today. Now, what do you get when you cross a seasoned new business expert with a stand-up comedian? Why, Jeremy Davies, of course.
If there's one thing we can't stand in the cutthroat, red-hot, 100-mile-per-hour world of new business, it's metaphor. New business needs to be no-nonsense, straight down the line. Does exactly what it says on the tin. Prospects won't give you the time of day if you aren't quick and to the point. Using metaphor is like giving them the cherry on the top without any of the cake. Metaphorically speaking. I'm exaggerating, of course. There are a few exceptions which prove the rule, and the most powerful of these is, without doubt, the metaphorical silver bullet, which also happens to be one of my personal favourite metaphors, just ahead of the sliding doors moment. Although the silver bullet idea owes its existence to a late 18th century legend rather than an underwhelming late 20th century British movie. In folklore, of course, the silver bullet is the only weapon that can kill the dreaded werewolf. And it has passed into popular vernacular as a metaphor for a solution to a particularly beastly problem. In new business, depending on whom you listen to, there seem to be enough silver bullets to power an army. Some say it's social media. According to others, it's a high-profile speaking opportunity at some industry bigwig conference. But, to mix my metaphors into a metaphorical cocktail, the holy grail of silver bullets, principally because its existence is undisputed, but no one can summon up the courage to successfully seek it, is the referral. Referrals are our best source of new business. It's the agency MD's first line of defence against a new business person. It's the equivalent of, not tonight, I'm washing my hair, used to shut down a conversation about getting involved in the messy business of proactive lead generation. Actually, that's another dodgy metaphor, because washing your hair actually involves some sort of effort on your part, whereas the type of agency boss that comes out with that particular line makes no effort whatsoever when it comes to new business. It's more like, not tonight, I'm going to stay home in the hope that someone else might wash my hair for me. It's meant to shut down the conversation, and it's also what kids today and readers of the Daily Mail would call virtue signalling, shorthand for our work is so good we don't have to get involved in the grubby business of selling. Thing is, there is a perfectly valid response, which is, like, duh, or words to that effect. Everyone knows that referrals and recommendations are the best source of new business. It's patently, blatantly obvious. It's the same reason people read reviews on Amazon before buying. So the next question you need to ask is, right, so what are you doing to ensure that you get plenty of leads through referral? And the chances are, the answer is nothing at all. asking for referrals is one of the last great taboos of new business, despite the fact that all BS aside, every client relationship is a business relationship, and doing business, by definition, involves selling. Proactive referral marketing should form part of any new business integrated strategy, because any agency that wants to keep the wolves from the door needs to fire a few well-aimed silver bullets amid the scattershot activity. Otherwise, you may find you've been firing blanks. Metaphorically speaking, of course.
Now that we're all over the novelty of video calls and instant messaging, we wanted to highlight some of the pro tools that will be helping your agency go from managing to mastering. Digital agency Hallam has been testing a wide range of remote collaboration and teamworking tools for years, and in this episode, we pick the brains of Hallam's lead marketer, Kieran S. Lawler, and pass on the knowledge to you. I hope you enjoy the show and find it useful. We cover a wide range of resources, so stick around, especially if you want to hear Kieran's hilarious reaction to me making some retro business references. So sit the facts down and enjoy me talking to Kieran S. Lawler of Hallam. Now, right at the very start of this pandemic, a new business opportunity came my way. And the way I like to do business is to engage with the new prospect on the phone and just to get a bit of chemistry going, really. But we were all just suffering from shock after being locked down for the first time. So what to do? I thought it's probably worth making a call just to see if anyone was manning the office. I phoned up and a cheery receptionist greeted me as if nothing was wrong and then asked who she could put me through to. And the line went click, and then one ring later, the prospect picked up the phone. "Are you still in the office?" I asked. "No, but our agency was built to work with the remote staff, so we've got all the systems already in place," he said. WTF, we're all WFH. It looks like lockdown might become as common as an office term as a whip round, as we all struggle to recreate the office environment in our home. That's without the annoying compulsory fire drill in the freezing cold. So I thought it'd be an idea to speak to one of the team behind the super slick, seamless remote office agency, Hallam, to see if they could share some tips and help us all achieve workplace zen in our domestic den. Hallam is designed to be agile, and as we found out in a previous podcast with applied futurist Tom Cheesewright, agility is the new name of the game. Now, I could show off my research skills and tell you all about the company that I'd found on the web, but why should I do that when I've got one of the best ambassadors for the agency reclining at ease in his quasi-office home with a large keg of beer at his side? Just kidding. Welcome, Kieran S. Lawler.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Welcome aboard. Welcome aboard. But I'd love to invite you to share a virtual beer, but it's only 11 a.m. my side of the pond, so that's pretty much just a happy hour for drunks in my part of the world. But how are you doing? Lockdown, etc. Are you you keep coping okay?
I think as well as anyone could, given the circumstances, Keith. You know, you mentioned 11 o'clock your end, but it's approaching close of play for us here, so the wine is within reach. I can tell you that.
Oh, so I wasn't too far wrong then.
No, I mean, you know, as you said, then we're set up to work from home, but it doesn't really make it any easier having to work from home constantly now.
No.
You know, there's sort of things around that. But me personally, mate, as good as it can be, yeah.
And I mean, I detect just a slight hint of a Liverpudlian accent there. Where did you grow up, and how did you end up getting to where you are?
Yeah, no, you're not wrong there. So born and bred Liverpool, big Reds.
Okay, good man. Yeah.
So grew up in Liverpool. Went to university in Liverpool. Studied marketing. And it wasn't until I actually finished university that I went traveling around Europe a little bit and actually got offered a job in Prague. I think it was like my fourth day of traveling. And it sort of, I didn't want the job in Prague by any means, but it opened my eyes to think maybe I should go and work in a different city for a little while. And when I got back, I started making applications to all the capital cities across the UK.
Right.
Unfortunately, found a marketing job in London, doing brand management for a few years. More recently located to Nottingham to work digital marketing specifically as part of Hallam.
Right. And so, I mean, have you always, I mean, you said you studied marketing. I mean, have you always had a fascination with marketing?
think so, mate. Yeah, it's always been one of them things where I've been interested in how it works and how it can actually work, how other people can influence and persuade people's purchase behaviors, attitudes, all those kind of things. So I've always had a big sort of wanting to learn around the consumer psychology side of things as well. And I think that's what really made me go to university to study it. But as well, you know, it's something that I enjoy. I enjoy reading about it. I enjoy being educated about it. So I thought, well, I might as well give it a go. I might as well at least try and be a marketer to see if I enjoy that as well.
And so, I mean, it's fascinating. I was listening to a show the other day, a podcast the other day with Malcolm Gladwell on it, and he was basically saying that how much he admired people that worked in the world of advertising because they have the ability to tell a story in 30 seconds from start to finish to be able to get you from cold to buying within 30 seconds. And it is when you look at it like that, and now obviously with the advent of social media and the likes, with there's a lot of skill involved in trying to get people, especially with all the noise now, trying to get people to a call to action.
Yeah, and you know, I think you touched on something there when you mentioned stories and storytelling is a type of marketing that we use.
Yeah.
Everyone's different, mate, and everyone has a different journey to that purchase. And ultimately, the size of the purchase plays a massive role in that time period as well. You know, think about yourself. If you're going to buy, you know, a cup of coffee versus buying a new car, you're going to give a lot more consideration to that car purchase. Mm-hmm. You're going to do more research around it. You're going to ask more people. You're going to probably spend more time on the web looking at that new car. Whereas if you're buying a coffee, you're just walking in and buying a coffee. That's a very quick decision that you're going to make.
Sure. And obviously different drivers and stuff. But I mean, I meant to say right at the top of the show, congratulations, by the way, on picking up, was it 10 drum recommends this week, including the Grand Prix for the third time in a row. I reckon that should be yours, don't you? After three wins, that's got to be yours to take home for good now.
Oh yeah, I mean we've got the old ones in the office as well. It's starting to build up. They're not light, these drum awards. They're quite heavy as well.
Are they really?
I feel sorry for the postman who has to deliver 10 of them to our office. But no, absolutely amazing, mate. Third year running that we've won the Grand Prix Awards. We're the first agency to ever win it back-to-back 3 years on the run. And I think what makes these awards really special for me and the agency, Keith, is that it's not an independent judging panel. It's not how many tables you buy at the awards show.
No.
These awards are based on client testimonials, client reviews. So that just makes it even extra special.
It's a panel of your peers, basically, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. It's the people who we're doing work for. So no,
that's good. I mean, it is a genuine thing, and props to the drum for doing that. Now, I mean, what was it that kind of attracted you to the sort of Hallam team? And I mean, what's kind of the sort of best bits about the company?
When I moved to Nottingham, Hallam were obviously stuck out as being the top digital marketing agency in the city. And, you know, we've now made big strides over the last few years to be seen as one of the big digital marketing agencies in the country, never mind just the East Midlands, which has been great. But I think when I first sort of set my eyes on Hallam, it was how they portrayed themselves, being at the forefront of digital marketing. Now, I've always, before joining Hallam, I was in-house, and you almost look at agencies in a little bit of awe, thinking like, oh, that, you know, it might be cool to do that one day. And it hasn't disappointed, to be totally honest with you, Keith. It's pretty cool working for Hallam. You know, when we are back in the office, for example, the stuff that we've got there in terms of, you know, as you'd imagine in a digital marketing agency, there's ping pong tables and beer fridges and Xboxes on the walls and all that kind of stuff. Just a nice culture, nice vibe, great people.
How many people there?
We've got about 50, 55.
Right, okay. It's a good size.
It's big enough to you know, be at the forefront and so many different people with different specialities to have that integrated service. But we're also small enough to remain agile and sort of adapt quickly and things like that. I think it's the perfect size, to be totally honest. I think, you know, some agencies have, you know, 100 plus, 200 plus people. You're surely going to lose a bit of culture by going that big, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and I think that there is also a threat to a company's agility when it gets to a certain size. But we'll come on to the agility in a bit. But I noticed going through your CV there that your career has got quite a kind of heavy element of sort of social media to it. And I'll be very interested to find out. I mean, do you see that the role of social media is going to have a kind of a greater now influence, given what we're all going through, sort of in people's lives moving forward? I mean, both in the B2B and the B2C world.
Yeah. I think social is only going to get more important, more part of our lives. I got a meme sent through on WhatsApp yesterday, Keith, and it said something along the lines of, "It's a good thing we're in lockdown in 2020 and not 2003, or we'd all be playing Snake on our Nokia," you know. And it kind of sort of ground you a little bit to what life is like now compared to how it used to be. And, you know, we've all got computers in our pockets now with access to thousands of friends, and we'll crave those endorphins for every time we get likes. And, you know, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch the Social Dilemma on Netflix recently.
Yes. I've just finished watching it. Yeah. It's great. I loved it.
They compare social media usage to a drug. And, I think it is that way for a lot of people nowadays.
Absolutely. Confession. I still look for the red dot on my LinkedIn profile, and you know, anything that lights up red. You know, I mean, that's just what happens, and it trains you to do that. The algorithm trains you to do that. I mean, I'm not so heavy on. I'm still fairly novice at Twitter and stuff like that, but. And I use it generally more as a broadcast than an interaction thing. But I can see how, I mean, especially that show, I mean, just how compelling people's use of social media can be and how addictive it can be. I mean, it's quite good. I mean, and talking of which, I mean, in your mind, with your experience, what do you reckon are the kind of the best and the worst features of social media?
I mean, for sure, the best features is what it was primarily intended for, is that social element, that social interaction you can have on it. You know, you can stay in touch with people who, you know, if you would have met them in the same situation sort of 20 years ago, you'd never have chance to catch up with those people again. Maybe someone who you've met on holiday around the pool, or, you know, you bumped into traveling, or even made friends through social in the group. So when it comes to that sort of interaction you can have with it, no matter where you are in the world with different people, I think that's got to be, you know, it's sort of key selling point. I think it always will be. But then obviously, like all social encounters and sort of situations, you have the negatives, you know, the dark negatives as well when it comes to the cyberbullying and, you know, the keyboard warriors who are happy to fire out criticism from behind a computer because they're safe in their bedroom, but they'd never say it to your face if they met you in person. And I think, you know, there's obviously the downside to that, as well as just the general health downsides from spending so much time on there, you know. Are you now, when I look at, you know, younger generations in terms of early teenagers, you know, are they being more social on their phones and not with the people around them? I think that's a concern as well.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. And I mean, from a philosophical standpoint, I mean, it's difficult to sort of see how you can actually stop people from doing, you know, from the negative sides of it. And it really is just a question of, you know, almost like the old days when you lived in a town or a city, there were certain places you went and certain places you didn't go. And that was it. I mean, the city was still there for good and bad, but, you know, I think social media itself there is a responsibility to educate people as to, you know, where are the good places to be and where aren't the good places to be. But you know, I think it's interesting. And I was given a good piece of advice recently that individuals and companies need to start kind of treating themselves as mini media companies, you know, with all the different kind of types of broadcast material that we've got to hand, you know, with vlogs and podcasts and live streams and webinars and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm from a time before the sort of social media and the internet. Actually, I was sort of existed before the internet. But I mean, do you think that the age of brochures and PowerPoints and things like that are dead? And, you know, do we still use those types of things, but there's just a digital and a new kind of social version of those coming up, do you think?
Yeah, I think it was interesting what you were saying then about becoming a media outlet. And I think, you know, if anyone wants to be successful on social, they do have to treat themselves like that. But not everyone wants to be successful on social. Some people just want to have a bit of fun, you know, and if yeah. that's the case, then it doesn't really matter seeing yourself as that sort of media outlet. When it comes to offline tactics, like your brochures and stuff like that.
I'm laughing
because... I think there is still a place for them. However, I think us as marketers need to be extra creative when we're using things like that. So I've always talked about how billboards are dying because they're not interactive enough.
Right.
Whereas, you know, you see some great sort of guerrilla marketing where they have a billboard advertisement, but it prompts the person passing to actually engage with the billboard, whether that be take a photo or use a hashtag or whatever that might look like.
Right.
And I think that's how offline media has to change, is you've almost got to put something in place to either stand out a lot, be super creative, or actually make that conversation go online.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could be aligned to the business of vinyl and records and stuff like that, is that, you know, the CDs came out and everybody was sort of immediately crying for the death of vinyl. And yet there are, you know, there are people that are very, very sort of huge fans of using vinyl, and bands that release tracks just purely for vinyl as well, which I think is, you know, is quite interesting. So, I mean, that kind of chimes in with what you were talking about using a billboard for something that wasn't just screaming at people to go and do something, but was a little more tactical perhaps.
Exactly. And, you know, it's the same reason why the bands are using the vinyls. It's a tactical thing because they know there's a gap there, there's a niche there. Yeah, I don't think anyone's screaming out for more brochures through the letterbox.
Fair enough, I'll take that. But I mean, basically, one of the conversations that I had recently as well was about the fact that the effects of this pandemic. I mean, do you think that, or is it fair to say that this pandemic has basically pushed us to a place that we were going to be it anyway at some point? I mean, this has just kind of speeded up the process. And if that is the case, I mean, what's your kind of advice for, you know, for basically maintaining a sensible work-life balance when we're all now working from home? And that question comes from my wife.
Love it. I mean, it's definitely speeded up the digital transformation of businesses. If we're, you know, when you look at a business point of view, probably I'd estimate by around 5 years, you know, for what we're seeing in the current digital market and other digital landscape. From a people point of view, has it sped things up? I'm not too sure. I think it's sped it up for a lot of sectors. You know, for people who have the ability to work from home. I think some more corporate companies will want people to come back into the office at some point. I suppose the question I've been asking myself and the one I've been posing to people recently is, will companies now have to offer a work from home incentive to attract the best talent moving forward because we're so used to working from home? You know, if I was going to get offered a job now and it would be like, you have to come to the office 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, with all the benefits that I get from working at Hallam, you know, work from anywhere, flexi time, all this kind of stuff, I'd be thinking to myself, do I really want that life again?
That's going to have to be a fair chunk of cheese there.
Exactly. So I think to hire the best talent, companies are going to have to really look at how they sort of blend their work hours with the staff's personal time, like you said then, you know. If I wanted to go for an extra long walk in the afternoon, you know, for half an hour, it doesn't really make much difference. You know, I haven't got like a manager sort of watching me for that. As long as I get the work done and, you know, I do the hours that are in my contract, I've got sort of free reign of when I do those things. No, I put a post out on LinkedIn the other day, Keith, and there's a lot, I don't know if you've seen this over your side, but in the UK, there's been a lot of people talking about even taking screen grabs of people when they work from home or using the camera to check in on people to make sure they're at their desk working. Wow.
Well, that's some Big Brother stuff, isn't it?
Exactly. And any manager who thinks that checking on their staff through webcam is a good use of productivity. I'm quite interested to see.
They need to take a long, serious, long, hard look at themselves, don't they, on that? But I know people that are, you know, especially in the US, there's a big push in the US, obviously, for people to get back to work, or there was a big push, and a lot of people are, except in the agency world, but in my friends and associates that aren't in the agency world, a lot of them are working again and back in the office again and commuting like nothing ever happened. And, you know, that is an extra mental strain for people to think about. And I think it's, you know, it is slightly unfair to put that on people, to ask them effectively to, you know, to stand in the front and take one for the team if necessary. I think it's a bit heavy. But then if you are working from home, and if your employer says, okay, well, that's fine, you can work from home, I mean, does that employer have a responsibility to make sure that it meets all the health and safety regulations for you working at home? I mean, do you think it could go that far?
No, I don't think so. I think you're responsible for your own home if you own it. If you're renting, your landlord's responsible for your welfare while you're there. Those things should be ticked off whether you're working there or not, you know, in my opinion.
So, sure.
You know, I don't think the employer should need to sort of risk that. You know, even when you talk about, you know, like working from anywhere policies, which are coming into place now, you know, using coffee shops or using, you know, there's those shared office spaces and things like that.
Yeah, like the WeWork type places.
Yeah, exactly. The employer has nothing to do with that. They've got no, they can't change what that coffee shop does. You know, they can't change what that WeWork place does. So
right.
I don't think they should really have responsibility. I think what they do have responsibility over is the mental health of their employers when they're working from home for long
right.
periods of time. And I think they've also got a responsibility to create an office space which actually attracts employees to come back to the office. You know, not telling them that they have to come back in, but making the office space so attractive that they want to go back in for at least part of the week anyway.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And that's probably, I mean, obviously it sounds like the Hallam team has that pretty nailed. And I mean, just out of interest, what is the policy as far as Hallam are concerned? I mean, is there do you have a commitment to go back in once a week or what's the, how do they leave it with you?
No, given the current climate and the coronavirus, we're working from home indefinitely, probably until early next year at least.
Wow.
Even before lockdown came into place, we had an unlimited work from home policy anyway.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. I mean, you know, my first encounter with Hallam was that the phone call, and it was so slick the way it was handled. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we've got systems set up to allow us to work from home, but I think what I was getting at is even though we have that unlimited work from home policy, the office was always buzzing. There was always people in there because right. they wanted to be in there because it made it an attractive place to be. But yeah, the platform you're talking about is when you made the phone call is something that we used to call 3CX, which is basically automates all of our calls straight to our mobiles, no matter where we are.
It was very good. Very good. To a Luddite like me, that was fantastic. I was, as I say, just, I thought, wow, everybody is working actually in the office. But, well, this kind of leads us nicely into the main reason that you're here, apart from the fact that you're a nice guy and love to have you on and et cetera. But, I asked if you could help all our listeners with some simple tips that will help them and their businesses kind of perform more effectively when working from home. So, tee you up, you're going to give us five of your favorite apps that cover most of the main areas of office operations, except for the old Grand National Sweepstake and stuff like that. But so I must point out, we aren't being sponsored by any of these companies. Although neither Kieran nor I will object if anyone wants to send round a keg of artisan IPA or something. Is that right?
That doesn't sound too bad to me.
Okay. So now your pick for best office communication tool. That's you went for Slack. So what are the best and worst parts of it? And what parts of a company does it benefit the most?
Yeah, so Slack is, without Slack, I don't think we could have gone from being in the office to work from home so smoothly overnight with, I mean, everyone working from home at once. It's very similar to Microsoft Teams. For me, it's just got a much better interface and much better sort of usability side of it. But it's basically a tool which allows you and everyone in your organization to direct message, share files, have conversations with each other in real time, have video calls if needed. But it's pretty much a big WhatsApp for your company. It's probably the best way to put it.
So, I mean, does that help kind of create the feeling that you are working with people, you know, even though they're not in the same space?
Yes. And it actually allows for really collaborative work to happen because you can start conversations. It also gives you the option to create not just private messages with people, but group messages.
Right.
Or if you want to create a section for a specific project you're working on, you can then invite everyone into that project. And it also integrates really nicely with a lot of other online tools as well. I'd probably say, you know, the best thing about it is that social element to it, though, Keith, is being able to sort of jump on and chat to people and get answers quickly, possibly more quickly than when you're actually in the office and you've got to walk to the desk and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that because, I mean, the last big office, the agency office that I worked in, I mean, you only communicated via email anyway with each other. And, I mean, because if you know, God forbid you actually walk up and walk into someone's office and ask them if they're free for a minute or something, it was unforgivable. But so, I mean, you know, that's like I said earlier, we are pretty much kind of there anyway. We were heading in that direction anyway. So, so, I mean, does Slack works right across the, you know, everybody in your business has Slack, and, you know, from sort of accountants right the way through to, you know, to all the account managers.
Correct. Correct. Everyone has it. It's probably the first application I open in the morning before right. I even look at my emails because it's internal communications. We very rarely use email for internal stuff now. Right. Email is external communication for us because it's too slow.
Email's so you're just instant messaging each other all the time.
Exactly.
Wow. And is there a cost to that? Is that a free or a...
I don't know what that answer is, unfortunately, Keith.
Okay, no problem.
Maybe we
can get somebody from Slack to come on and tell us. All right, fine. Okay, now you also picked out for your second really useful tool, something that I haven't heard of, which is it Jira? Jira?
I think it's actually pronounced Jira, but I've got a tendency of calling it Jira.
Right.
So I don't know. Everyone in Hallam would have you call it Jira. I wind them up sometimes. I start calling it anything beginning with J just to wind them up. But
I was going to say, if you were from the Netherlands, you might call it Hera.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So this is for project boards, right? So how does that work?
So it allows you to plan specific tasks and associate those tasks to an end goal, to you know, to a project, like you said. So starting at the top, you basically decide what the objective is. You create a project board for it, and then you basically map out everything that you need to do to accomplish that project. And each of those tasks then gets called, it's called a ticket, and you can assign the tickets to different people around the agency as well. And you can also talk within that ticket or put briefs in or share images and all that kind of thing as well.
Okay, so you're basically, I mean, you are dividing a project up into its individual components, and everybody responsible for that project or for those parts, those components, then it basically maps when those things have been completed, and so you can actually chart your progress through the whole thing. Is that right?
Exactly, exactly. It keeps people accountable for what they need to do, keeps people on track, allows others to see when things may be getting held up or blocked, and allows you to jump in and see how you can help out. And it has a lovely little bar for you as well, Keith, to show you how far you're into completing that project.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. Very, very handy. So, okay. Well, that is useful, because I know obviously everybody is involved in a project in some way, shape, or form in the agency world. So very useful. And you use that all the time, do you? You guys?
Yeah. Again, we're not using, I wouldn't say it's open as regular as Slack, but it's certainly it's a hub for our project work. It's definitely open every day at least. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. And so how does that differ from collaboration software? I mean, because obviously you nominated a couple of companies for collaboration software. Is there a big difference between, you know, between Jira and the two that you've nominated, and if you want to name them?
Yeah, I think from, you know, we're talking collaboration software, what you're actually trying to achieve there is the tactical implementation of tasks. So whereas you'd use Slack for your general comms and you'd use Jira for your project management, your collaboration ones are going to be open when you're actually working on these things. And what you want is to be able to work on them with other people in real time.
Okay.
And that's why I put forward Google Drive, because no matter if you're working on a document, a slideshow, an Excel type sheet, whatever Google calls the Excel sheets, it allows real-time collaboration. You know, you can invite as many people as you want from the agency into those documents, and they can work together on them. I think the other one was Notion as well.
Yeah, you mentioned Notion for sure. I mean, these are all part of the same thing, are they? They're all the sort of similar sort of collaboration software.
Kind of. So Google owns the Drive, so that's more of a, you know, for your formal documents, I'd say.
Right.
The documents that you potentially want to send out to clients or use as decks. Word documents, presentation slides, that kind of thing. Notion is more of a, you know, on your laptop when you go to the bottom and you have the little notepad. I like to describe Notion as like a notepad on steroids. It has that and so much more. It's a space where you can create banks of information. So, you know, for us, we use it for things like creating banks of information for specific clients, or banks of information for projects, which, or information that we need long term. So, if you're working on a quick project, you might lose that information in Jira. You're definitely going to lose it in Slack because of the nature of the sort of direct message. But Notion, it's almost like a safe for all of your documents and information. That's going to be there for.
I guess. Obviously, coming from the old school approach to things, that this, the advantage, the obvious advantage for this, just listening to what you were just saying there, is that this is keeping a paper trail of everything that's gone through on the way through. So, you know, there's going to be a lot less finger pointing at the end of a project, because you've actually got, you know, you've actually got the, you know, the sort of milestones are all logged and have been approved and managed all the way through.
yeah, I mean, you don't have the finger pointing because everything gets done now, you know.
Yeah.
Because you've got sort of that bank of information from previous stuff as well, there's always stuff to lean on. Because you've got the instant communication with people, there's always people to ask questions to. So there's not really much go away in isolation and complete your part of the project and then come back and present it and all this sort of dwell time and getting people's opinions sort of after they've seen it. You know, it's everything's in real time now.
That's fantastic. That sounds good. That sounds very useful. That's a good one. So out of that, you've got Google Drive. So these are collaboration software. So you've got Google Drive, Notion, and Miro.
Oh, yeah. I forgot I mentioned Miro to you. So Miro is basically for anyone who wants to sort of do ideation sessions or get lots of ideas down onto a page, or even if they're maybe looking at any sort of blank template. So imagine having like a big blackboard in front of you that we've got in the office. We've
turned
the
whole
chalkboard. Yeah, yeah. Miro is basically an online version of that, you know, where people can collaborate on a big board together and throw ideas at it and things like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of a freestyling, sketchy doodling type thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think it even has like a post-it note function. So where you would be in the office and you'd all be doing post-it notes and putting them on a glass wall, you're putting virtual post-it notes on the Miro wall now.
No agency can exist without post-it. It's just those two things. Okay, another thing is that, and something that is very close to my heart is that, I was talking to somebody the other day and they'd had a bunch of meetings and they were talking about how simple it is now to be able to, you know, sort of in the morning be talking to somebody in Nottingham and in the afternoon speaking to somebody, you know, in North America and then having a meeting with someone in Asia sort of later on in the evening or in Australia and stuff. So we're now all living in multiple time zones at any one time. And, you know, it is actually possible to have like six different meetings in six different countries these days. But, you know, and I have to work across four different time zones and it can get very, very frustrating and you need to have very good time management. Now, on the time management side of this, you put forward Maven Link. And how does that work? And what's that all about?
Yeah, no, another tool for you. Mavenlink is basically a program which allows you to manage time, which sounds quite scary, but when you start using it, it's super effective. It makes you so much more efficient as well. So if I want to set up a project and I know that I need, person A, B, and C, I can actually jump into Mavenlink and see what their capacity looks like over the next few weeks.
Right.
So I can then have a real-time conversation with a client to say, the deadline for this is going to be this deadline, because I can see right in front of me when people have got capacity to actually work on it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's because I have been, you know, I've been tempted to, just from a scheduling perspective, to be looking at Calendly or whatever they call it. And it's just that I said something the other day and I got kind of shot down for it, but it was just a bit dismissive. There was something a bit dismissive about it. And it's kind of like, you know, like me say to you, okay, Kieran, let's see if we can get a date in the diary and we can have a long chat about it. And you just go, yeah, okay, well just click my link and then we'll and just book a time for yourself. It's like there's something a little bit impersonal about it. And I thought that, you know, that there must be another way to do it. So it's quite interesting that you mentioned this, which is obviously seems to be a little bit more consultative as you go through things.
Yeah, because ultimately you're in charge of your own time, aren't you? I think for me with Calendly and apps like that, I like using them when if me and you were trying to book a meeting and we were doing it over audio or over video, no problem, no need to use the link. But if we're trying to email each other about a meeting and then we're both free and there's that back and forward, back and forward.
What about four? Can't do four. What about 3:30? Yeah, no.
I think if you're trying to book a meeting over email, then Calendly certainly serves a purpose there. And I think for businesses as well, you know, if you're trying to set up calls with prospects who you want to do business with, giving them a link to an email before they've even had a chance to have that conversation, I suppose, is a little bit easier as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I'm on your side there, Keith. I'd rather, if you're talking to someone, just do it over.
Yeah, over it's easy enough.
Yeah. Hey.
I come from the old days when people used to pull out a file of fax. That was impressive. You ever seen one of those? I bet you haven't seen one, have you?
I don't think I have, actually, no. No, I've heard the word, but I can't. I've got no picture in my head at all of what a file of fax looks like.
It was something like a, how could I describe it? It looked like a Bible, okay? It looked like a really, it was about the thickness of a Bible, and it had 1,000 different separators in it. And if you were really lucky, your other half bought you a new section for it for your birthday or whatever. So this would be like, you know, sort of meetings or something. And they were basically, it was just a big ring binder. That's all it was, except they called it a file of fax. But damn it, I'm going to have to put a photograph of one up on the thing now, so that everybody, because otherwise nobody's going to know what I'm talking about. It's like I'm trying to explain what a fire is to a, you know, to somebody. It's just
I'm checking it out on Google.
Filofax, F-I-L-O-F-A-X.
I mean, now I've seen a picture. I vaguely remember seeing.
You can probably buy them on eBay now. They're probably worth a fortune. But they were. I mean, back in the '80s, they were the thing. They were definitely the thing.
Cutting edge technology in the '80s.
Absolutely, yeah. It was all manual. So and sometimes your file of fax had a calculator with it as well, which was like that was pretty excellent. So. So there we go. There's me showing my age. So here's a bit of fun for you. In terms of office life, now that things have sort of dramatically changed for everybody, what feature of office life will you not miss?
It's a good question, actually. What will I not miss? I mean, the problem at lunchtime every day where you've got to figure out where you're going to go for your lunch or, you know, fighting for microwave. Home-cooked food every day, all day. I'm getting quite used to, probably a bit too used to, in all honesty.
Leftovers.
Yeah, I certainly don't. I don't miss my food intake's got better in terms of the quality, probably a bit too much in terms of the quantity. But yeah, I mean, the obvious thing that some people reach out to is sort of like the commute and things like that. And I think if you've got a long commute or you do a long drive, then that makes sense. But fortunately, I live a quite nice sort of walking distance from the office. So
right.
I think if I did have a long drive for a commute, that would probably trump that, but I don't.
Yeah. So it's that thorny old question about where to go for lunch. So where to go for lunch is another one that doesn't happen anymore. All right, so there you have it. There you go. We've got five tools that make working from home easier. One thing that we can't do is replace your boss. But so anybody listening there we'll put the links to all this software on the show notes, and people can check it out for themselves. We're not sure whether how much any of it costs, or if we know Google and stuff like that, it's all free. We will not be subsidizing. We don't have any special offers or anything else like that. But we will make sure that the people that know that we sent you. So that'd be great. And we'll put little links to all their business on the site. So when you're not being Kieran the marketing guru, what do you like to do to relax?
I think it's changed massively recently. So I love travel. You know, I love going into Europe for, even if it's just for a short weekend. Obviously living about a 2-hour drive from Liverpool now. So going back home to spend time with friends and family. Those things are not as easy to do now. Right. We're going back into tier 3 lockdown in the UK. And, you know, I'm still being erring on the side of caution when it comes to traveling into Europe and things like that. So I've actually picked up a few new hobbies during lockdown, if you like. So got my running shoes back out, Keith.
Oh, good, man. Good man.
Hiking. I've discovered hiking. I haven't been hiking in about 10 years. I've been going to different areas in the UK, the Peak District, the Lake District, going camping, just enjoying the great outdoors again.
Which bit of bushcraft.
Really nice. We're not that far. Not that far. But certainly,
I mean, you look like you could do it. I mean, I must say, for anybody, if they don't watch the video, he's got a marvelous sort of Viking beard going on here. So it looked like you could survive.
The closest I get to bushcraft is probably setting up a fire outside the tent. But yeah, certainly take the barbecue with me when I go camping.
Grilling bear.
Yeah.
Oh dear, but okay, excellent. Well, that's you're kind of that's good, and it's always good to keep fit. As I heard the other day, it does you good to break sweat once a day. So that's probably it's a good stress relief, apparently. Now, one of the traditions that we're building up, and it's only taken 30 odd episodes, but we've been putting together a mixtape, and edition one will be coming out for Christmas. We're now into edition two. So we're asking every guest that comes on to put one track forward for the mixtape. And then at the end of it, we give it over to a fella called Bill Walsgrove, who's got an absolute dog's dinner of music that he has to try and blend into one big track. So, the best you can find, please. So have you got an isolation island disc, one piece of music that you would take with you on a desert island?
Yeah. I mean, when you asked me this initially, I was concerned whether it was an island if I was going to be getting stuck on, or whether I was going to be relaxing, Keith. And definitely, if it's a relaxation island, I've been listening to a lot of FKJ recently.
Right.
I think it actually it's an acronym for French Kiwi Juice.
is that really? Because yes, okay, all right, I'll buy that.
Super chilled out music.
It is
super relaxed. And big stress releaser. If I had to choose one song from his, many, I'd probably go with Skyline.
Lovely. Well, I did give it a quick listen yesterday, and it does have some very chilled elements to it. So, definitely. And yeah, you can make the island whatever you want. It can be a nice relaxing island. But you only get the one track. But you do get a book as well. So, is there a book that you would you take with you to listen to FKJ?
Yeah, well, I've literally just started reading The Book Thief. I think it's quite a well-recognised book anyway, by Marcus Suzak.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big book, Keith, so I think I'd have to take that to give myself time to finish it.
Is it as big as a file of facts?
Probably, by the sound of it. The one with the calculator in them.
Fantastic. I'm going to have to find one and buy you one now, just for the fun. Okay. So, all right. So that's great. So that's going to go on our virtual bookshelf that goes behind everybody who's now broadcasting from home. So not only have we given you five really useful pieces of software, we've also given you a piece of music and a book to put on your bookshelf behind you as well. So you're pretty much kitted out now if you're working from home. And all right. So looking forward now, Kieran, what's coming up for Hallam over the next month or two? Basking in the glory of some awards, I should imagine, and busy answering the phone from interested brands wanting to talk to you, I should imagine.
I hope so. It'll make my job as head of marketing a lot easier, tell you that, Keith. Definitely. I think it's regroup after having such a great year when it comes to awards, and start sort of planning for the next year as well. Digital marketing is moving very quickly at the moment, and we're having to, like I said, remain agile for our clients and keep ourselves educated with all the changes which are going on. So I think a lot of the work we're going to be doing now is basically planning for our clients' future, more so in terms of how we can help them get through the current recession and the sure. current climate and things like that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, good idea. Good idea. And being useful as well. I mean, that seems to be one of the key things that people have highlighted at the moment, is just, it's providing support for clients and potential clients and prospects and all that sort of thing with good quality information and being able to help them see through all the mess that has now been created for everybody. But I wish you luck with all that. It sounds great. And as as I say, I mean, you know, very agile agency, and I was very impressed. Always have been, and I think it's you know, it's good to see you're sort of leading the charge, but with your hat slightly on the tilt and giving it a sort of slightly a jovial approach to things, which is always good. So nice to hear, and good healthy stuff. But so anyone wanting to find out a little bit more about it, how do they reach you, Kieran?
Probably best off heading over to the website, halleminternet.com, or if they wanted to reach out directly to myself, Kieran S-Lawler on LinkedIn. Bit of a mouthful, but I'm sure you'll find me.
Oh, we'll put the link to you on the site anyway. But splendid talking to you anyway, Kieran, and you've been a great guest and very useful. I appreciate you doing that, because that's got some real value for listeners as well. And you know, maybe we'll take this online and start talking about it on LinkedIn. See if we can get a bit of a conversation going on the all the different types of software, because there are plenty of options for people working from home, and there's no need to be to feel too overwhelmed, because there are plenty of options available, and people like Kieran who know their way around it. So all very handy. But so anyway, well, listen, thank you very much, Kieran. Good to talk to you, and I hope you get back up to see your folks soon, and spend some quality time with them. But in the meantime, stay safe and look after yourself.
I appreciate that, Keith. Thanks very much for having me, mate. It's been a pleasure.
All the best. Take care.
Bye now.
And that's a wrap. Actually, a tortilla is a wrap, but that's the end of this week's show. My hearty thanks to Kieran and to Hallam for sharing some business secrets. My thanks also to Team Fuel, that's co-producer Donna, the band, the prospectors, and our vital IT support provided by the kindly folk at Quijibo Design in downtown Indianapolis, USA. So join us next time on The Fuel, the new business podcast sponsored by The Advertist, the new business development platform, when we'll be serving up another nourishing gourmet course of sales wisdom, as well as a healthy dose of insight for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you?